Well, good morning. It's a pleasure to be with everyone today. This is such a critical topic for the partnership. I'm Jeff Fleur. I'm the president of the Great Wichita Partnership in downtown Wichita. I'm one that moved to this city. I selected to come to Wichita, and we have been here now, oh my gosh, since 2008. So we believe in this community. It's an incredible place. And so, again, we look forward to talking about the opportunities that are coming forward with talent.
Good morning. It is really great to be here on today. I am LaShonda Garnes, and I serve as the Director of Inclusion, Equity, and Diversity for Fidelity Bank. I, too, like Jeff, am a transplant to Wichita and have really enjoyed the opportunities that this community has afforded me. I look forward to the conversation today.
Good morning. I'm Amber Nisus. I'm the VP of Culture here at WSU Tech in Wichita, and I've not a transplant. I've been in Wichita my entire life. I love the community, and it's one of the reasons why I transferred over to WSU Tech about a year and a half ago to help with their mission. So happy to be here today.
Great. Thanks to all of you. My first question could have been written by Kay because she spoke directly to this. We've written in the Business Journal a lot now about the education cliff that was approaching, and Kay pointed it out very nicely with fewer students, fewer high school graduates, fewer college students coming out into the workforce. What about, she talked a little bit about employers had better be ready. Can you all talk about whether you think employers are ready, how are employers and educational institutions such as WSU Tech, how are you reacting to this cliff? And anybody can start.
Well, I'll go ahead and start. Thanks. I think that our employers are ready. I wouldn't say they are like in the momentum to start making changes right now or doing things like that, but they are preparing for this cliff. Certainly here at WSU Tech, they do a lot in preparing for this cliff, and they talk about it a lot from the student perspective and what that means to them as they go. But from our perspective, from an HR perspective, we need to be preparing our staff and our hiring managers for what it means to them when they go out there and they're looking for talent to come onto their team. So it's our job to prepare them for what they're going to see, what they need to look for, and things that they need to take into consideration when they're bringing in talent to their team. It's not the same as it was before. We're not just going out there and looking for, well, if they have a bachelor's degree or they have 5 years experience or what that. They need to be looking at it from a different perspective. And I think that they're preparing, and I think that's what we're supposed to do, and we'll help support them around that.
I'll jump in and talk about, I'm sorry, Lacey, you want to go?
Yep.
From like an ecosystem point of view, which is really what the partnership kind of approaches, the area of talent. Ricky Ellison, there's Ricky right over here to my left, and Tammy Bradley, and I don't know, Kara's here as well, somewhere in the crowd, right over here, on our team. And it really is thinking about the ecosystem, what's happening. And I would say that for Wichita and this region, there's a depth of understanding of where we're going. And I think that's really important for a community because that comes into play with working with business on where they want to go, but then also with education and a nimbleness. It was mentioned by Kay about the talent roadmap. I will tell you that a month into the pandemic, so in April of 2020, Sherry Utash calls, and we're all hunkered down in our homes at that point, and she goes, life is going to be different with workforce after the pandemic. And I said, Sherry, what do you think? And she goes, I don't know. She goes, we got to find out. And so we hired Deloitte as a community. And that was something that was not budgeted. But yet, the political will, so the county, the city, the private sector funded that to really create a roadmap in the ecosystem to understand how are things changing from digitalization, from AI. So how is it we're preparing for the workforce? Now, you may ask, well, how does that get to the cliff? Well, we understand where we need to go. So now we start to mine out how is it that we make sure we mitigate that cliff, at least for Wichita and this region. And I'll tell you, as Ryan was speaking earlier, that's one of the things that's making us very competitive with industry. And there's a lot of things, and Kurt, I'm going to cut off right now because there's a lot of things I want to go into, but there is an ecosystem that we're talking about here as we talk about talent and how is it that we cultivate it but also retain it.
Okay. Go ahead, Lacey.
No, the only point I would add to that is specifically looking at working with younger and younger populations within the community. I'm blessed today to have some individuals from my team here who works specifically on pipeline development, both at the high school and even at the middle school levels. So I think we're just going to have to really start building those pipelines, not only at the college age, but just going younger and younger and deeper into the community. And so I just want to call out Jacoby Davidson, who's here with us today, who does a lot of work in that space for me.
Mm-hmm. I also want to follow up on a question that something that Kay talked about the changing face of the workforce that's upcoming. Not only do we have a smaller workforce coming, but the diversity is changing. It's increasing. And can you all talk about how companies are adjusting to that? What adjustments have been made already? What adjustments are ahead? And how do you basically get good at it?
I don't know if getting good at it is probably where we are right now, but I think changing the conversation around what we're looking for and not always looking for the same thing that we've been looking for in the past. How we're sourcing the talent to bring the candidates in is one of the areas. What we see when what we give to the hiring managers for them to look at is also one. And then again, putting that supportive role behind the hiring team that is bringing people in and support them and communicate with them about the position doesn't really need 6 years of experience in this particular area because that's a trainable skill. We don't really need that. So what does that look like when you're looking at candidates that don't necessarily have the 6 years experience that they initially thought that they needed for that position? I get that they want to drop somebody in there and have them go right away, but if you train them in how you're doing on your team at this point in time, you may have a longer candidate down the road anyway. So kind of having those conversations about what it looks like when they're out there looking for candidates and how it looks different than it used to.
I would say that one of the ways that we get good at it is by retaining the talent we currently have and utilizing that pool of talent to create representation throughout all levels of leadership, to utilize that brain thrust to help us build organizational cultures so that as we are going out to recruit, we are building cultures that can receive this best talent, this changing workforce that we are going to run up against in the next couple of years. So I think part of the work is how do we get good at retaining and promoting the talent we already have and creating the space so that we can create a culture that knows what to do with the talent when we get it. Mm-hmm. So we can attract all the talent we want, but if we don't know what to do with the diversity of that talent, the thought, the perspective, the innovation, the creativity, as quickly as we got them, we will lose them faster. And that is a bigger investment that we lose when we have to retrain talent and recruit talent all over again because we didn't do the hard work of building inclusive cultures that allow them to have a place to thrive.
I'd say as a nonprofit, I mean, we're approaching this in a way of being really deliberate. And sitting down with our team leadership. I mean, each of them have teams themselves, is really listening to them. In fact, we did it yesterday. I said, you know, for the next 6 months, I want to think about how is it that we're going to engage our workforce. There certainly are things that we need to do as a company, of course, to keep them apprised of what's happening with all the initiatives that we're touching. But how is it that we're really, you know, connecting, if you will, with them as an individual? How is it that we're mentoring? I think that's really important as well, investing in people as we invest in the community. And those are deliberate strategies. You know, a lot of times, Ricky will hear us say, deliberate strategies for intended outcome, right? If you want the intended outcome, you better have a purpose on how you're going to get there. And I think for companies, a lot of times, you can be so into we're doing the things that we do, right, our mission. But now I think there's even a greater understanding that the culture of your company is incredibly important from retention to actually being able to attract people into your company. You want that reputation that you want to work there. I mean, they listen to what you have to say. They take what you say and they work through a process. Now, it doesn't always mean it will end maybe in the result you want, but at least I think people understanding that there is you will hear their voice, and then how is it you develop the company with that is really important as you go forward. And I would tell you that, you know, I'm hitting a benchmark year this year at 60. That was not the way I entered the workforce. You know, when I graduated from college, that wasn't the intention, right? Nothing against the company I work for, but today I think there's, and rightfully so, a much stronger conversation around that, which we should have.
Jeff, let me follow up on that. Our publisher, John, likes to talk about with emerging leaders who are, you know, age 25 to 40, that the landscape is changing away from old white guys like John and me. You'd work with a lot of companies, you work with a lot of leaders in business in Wichita who are old white guys. Do you try to message to them that, hey, this is coming and you really need to pay attention?
Yeah, I think that what we want to be able to do is tap into everyone who wants to work in our community. And how is it that you create those opportunities, that you're deliberate with that? I think that there's some really strong things happening right now with UST 259. With the future of work and what they're doing in the ready centers, if you will, around manufacturing, healthcare, IT. But I think it's a thing, you know, we're in competition with other places in the country, right? North America globally. Ryan mentioned that we're a global city, and we are. So how is it that we cultivate an environment where people feel like they can come in and actually really grow in themselves professionally, but then also contribute to the bigger picture is really important as we do that. And that gives us opportunities to be able to grow in the areas that we need to.
I'm sorry, were you going to say something, Amber? Okay. I can only see two people speaking because the way this is, we're lined up. I need to either move forward or back. Let's talk about attracting talent and when you're recruiting. What have you found some of the best ways to show yourself off as a company and what you're about? And has that changed over time, especially recently?
I guess, take a stab at this. So what I have noticed in recent years across industries, it's not necessarily industry specific, is that candidates in the market today, regardless of the generation, I think there's a lot of talk around, you know, younger generations wanting flexibility and looking at things differently. But I think just over the past few years, we've all been through a lot across generations, whether it's COVID or layoffs or inflation or all the things, you know, in the political landscape that affect our daily lives. So I think candidates in the market today really see through kind of empty corporate platitudes and buzzwords that really don't hold weight once they get into a role. So I think candidates of all generations are more risk averse to not stay somewhere where those kind of empty promises, if you will, are not being kept. So I think it's really, really important to expect the candidates today to turn the tables. So think of it like you're in an interview and you're the interviewer and you're asking questions. Tell me about a time you did X and tell me how you did it. Well, now the candidates are asking, how are you doing these things? What is the company doing? How are you doing it? How is your company creating an inclusive experience? What is the long-term vision of this company? All of these things, right? What is the career development? What are some stories? What are some proof? Tell me about a time you've empowered an employee here and how you groomed them into being a leader. So I think the leadership style also needs to change. It's really shifting away from authoritative leadership style to a true servant leadership mindset and really empowering others. And that is your success story as a leader, is how you actually grow and develop that talent. So that would be.
I think attraction, retention, and development in regards to bringing new people into your team is kind of a step process. And the first thing you need to do is get your house in order, become a culture of inclusive environment, know what it is that your environment is, what drives it, what its mission is, the conversations that the leaders are having, and then that's what you promote out there so you don't so much bring somebody to the table and tell them something that isn't true, because like Lacey said, they will see through that. And in today's day and age, they are searching, they are researching the companies before they come to them, and they know what's going on in those organizations. They see it. Social media is a big influence on that. So kind of getting your house in order, working on your culture, which is not something that's going to happen very quickly, before you promote that or brand that out as an organization, because you don't want to perceive to be something that you're not when you bring them in. So
I would just add, I think Kay said something earlier that was really interesting. Her sons were sitting at the table, one head up the stock, one head up the board of directors. And they were making decisions based off of them being able to see themselves within that particular organization. That was an investment, right? So imagine the individual that is looking to determine whether or not you are the employer for them. They're looking at your board of directors. They're looking at your presence in community. They're looking at how you are giving philanthropically. So when we think about this attraction piece, it is in all of the elements that we do as an organization, how we build products that cater to the needs of the diversity of the people we serve, how we serve in community, how we support nonprofits, and all of the other things that we do. So I think we have to make sure that when we're thinking about attraction, we are not just thinking about the hiring process, but we are thinking about the holistic being of who we are as a company in the organizations in which we have a footprint.
And I think from, again, going back to the ecosystem, is you can have an incredibly dynamic company, but if they're not in a vibrant community, talent's not going to want to stay or be attracted to that. And so as you think about, you know, this is not an either or, it's both of these things, you know, that we have to be doing concurrently as a region, as a state. You think about the arts. We had the opportunity most recently to talk to a search group that, again, probably has a global significance as far as the reach of the recruitment. As you start talking about the arts, if you go to the opera, the ballet, music theater, you go into things like the Sedgwick County Zoo, Botanica, all really critical pieces of the equation. But then also, how is it that we're hitting the housing options? You know, Ryan mentioned about, you know, housing affordability. How do we do that well? We have to invest in ourselves as a community, and we can't pull back from that. You saw a great demonstration just this last week where Textron invested multiple millions of dollars into destination play that Exploration Place is getting ready to break ground on. That's important. It's a quality of life amenity that we need to have as a community. But again, it's all these different things that come into the equation. What we do a lot with our team is really come alongside companies to sell who we are as a community, because that helps, I think, in the conversation on talent that they want either to retain or to attract. The talent roadmap that we mentioned earlier with Deloitte, 13 different initiatives around transit. I remember we were at the ballpark, and actually I think it was Spirit, we were talking to interns, and these interns were coming from all over the country. The first question was, talk to us about your future thoughts on transit. How's it going to change in Wichita? Because what we've experienced is not quite what we would like to have in the city where we would want to locate. Okay, we should take middle note of that and actually do some things about it, right? The other piece of it is childcare. You know, it's looking at the equations of talent, right? And how is it we holistically really deal with that with the community? And I will tell you that when we sit down with prospects, and these prospects can be companies that are expanding locally, I call them a prospect because a lot of times they have options. They may be in multiple places in the country, and they're deciding, do we do it here or we do it somewhere else? Or you may have truly a new company coming in. If they see a community that is really, you know, they're thoughtful, but they're also taking action on all the things I just said, that lends to a decision point for them. The other part of it is the alignment of the private sector working with the public sector. What you saw demonstrated with Ryan today was a political will to see great things happen. With Kay and the private sector, how do we come together to make these things really come to fruition? That's the ecosystem that has to be at play, and that's a strategy. And that's something that every day that we have to make sure we're doing. And as we often say, we all build Wichita. You all have a responsibility of building this community together, again, to where talent wants to be here, but also you can attract them here as well.
When those who are being recruited become the interviewer instead of the interviewee during interviews. And they do their research. They've done the research coming in. They know who's on the board of directors. They've done their homework. How can companies get better at their own corporate face when they meet with a recruit? Are they getting better, first of all, and what does it take to get better?
I guess that's me. Okay. Well, from my standpoint, I think it's really important for companies to try to be a little bit more transparent, try to be more open, and to really actively listen. So I think one of the most important things that I have observed over my many years in talent is, you know, especially as we are speaking about these younger generations, is just they really want to be a part of the conversation. They really want to feel connected to the company vision, and they want to understand all aspects of the business. So I think the younger generations are getting smarter and smarter, and they want to be able to ideate with leaders. So I think going into those conversations, really expecting an exchange and not necessarily just speaking to, but really improving on active listening, I think it's going to be really, really important. Because I think something that's important to all generations, but especially the younger generations, is their ability to make a true impact and to really feel connected to what the company is building and to feel connected to their local community. If those things are disconnected, you may not attract the talent, but you certainly won't retain them. I don't want to go too much depth in retaining talent, since I know that's a separate panel, but it's definitely, you know, a huge driver of attrition. So really understanding kind of the attrition analysis that is running behind the scenes as far as the data, what it's telling us about the drivers of attrition, as well as attraction, but specifically why employees are leaving, and are leaving in greater percentages within their first year of employment. It's a real sense of disconnection and not feeling like they're being heard, and not feeling like they're being able to ideate and have an impact.
I would just add that I think you take all of the things that Lacey just described, and they have to be interwoven into the fabric of your culture and into your leadership. And if there is no accountability, and we allow microcultures to foster and take precedent over what we are saying we are and what we want to be and who we want to attract, we will constantly find ourselves in this boat of moving from not retaining the talent, the good talent that we've gotten in the door, because we're not holding our leaders accountable to the work and to who we say we are. And so we have to figure out, how do we interweave that into the fabric so it is not an afterthought, but it shows up how we lead in the space with each and every one of the employees we engage with.
We've talked about accountability. We've talked about transparency when you're looking at talent, when you're recruiting. I'm wondering about flexibility. That, you know, someone wants to work at home more than you would normally want them to work from home. Someone wants benefits that you wouldn't normally give a new hire. Talk about how flexibility has changed and how important it is to get the people you want into your culture.
I'll just say, talk about not wanting to go back to pre-COVID. So I work in an industry where you would have never thunk, I think that's a word, that the banking industry would find a way to work from home. We were our own 2-year pilot because everyone went home. And so now that we are back in the workforce and we are thinking about how do we do this work, one of the things I think, admittedly, we have an opportunity to do is that we have to retrain our workforce, because we have never been a workforce that had to manage in that way. We have never been a workforce who had to think about how do you create the diverse shifts that you need to have so that you can create equity in how you think about flexibility. How do you create the ability for managers who've never had to manage a workforce that was hybrid, part of the team at home, part of the team in the office, creating still these organizational teams and structures. So I think there is a real work for us as we think about flexibility and truly being creative, and we will need the minds of many to help us get to a place that we can do that in an equitable way, in a way that's accountable, and in a way that we're no longer managing from this idea that butts in the seat means you're working. We've all had the days where we haven't done a thing, right? That doesn't mean I'm productive because I'm in the space. It just means that I'm in the space. And if we don't shift our mind, if we don't have the paradigm shift to thinking about where the work needs to be done and how the work needs to be done, we will lose talent. Our talent, we have to remember that the talent workforce we have today has options.
Yes. I might piggyback on what LaShonda is saying, that we have to rethink what that looks like for us, that 100% from home and how we transition and support and train people into being a flexible working environment and what that looks like for every organization and or every position. The nurse that gives you a vaccine cannot work from home. There are positions that lend very well to it and positions that do not. But I think we're kind of in the middle of that kind of working space transitioning and learning and educating our workforce into what that looks like for us, for you, for another industry, because it's different everywhere you go.
I would definitely say it's a journey, correct? I mean, and it's a thing where you're going to try some things and it's going to work beautifully. You're going to try some things, it doesn't work so well. Maybe it's even a failure. And that's okay, because I think it then influences, it helps you inform what the next decision ought to be. I know for us with workforce, we really have worked to try to strike what's the balance of what we know we need as far as the collaboration. I mean, for our company, collaboration is really important with all the different initiatives that we're dealing with. But also the flexibility. I mean, we actually have an employee that, you know, they were with us for about a year, and then her husband got transferred. She was a crazy good employee. She now works remote in another state. We're like, we're going to try this because they're that good. They understand what we need to achieve, right? And so, and they were willing to try it, and it's working. We have to work through moments sometimes of just technology. But again, having access to what they can do greatly advances what we need to advance. And so I will tell you, you know, it's just part of it's a flexibility. You know, I think for workforce that, you know, a lot of times I've talked to myself about, if I want the flexibility for my team, I've got to demonstrate that too, right? I mean, because if I demonstrate, well, I'm going to go run my child to the doctor or whatever it may be, they fill in that invitation that, yes, that truly is the culture of this company, right? And so a lot of it goes back into your leadership as well and what you're demonstrating to your team as far as creating the culture that you want to have.
Yeah, I think that ties to the accountability piece to really, you know, be the kind of thought leader and really showcasing, you know, how that can work. I think another piece that's important is just modernizing the way that you're thinking, as well as the technology and the infrastructure itself. You know, I know in our industry in aerospace, you know, there's a lot of modernization that needs to happen to be able, from an infrastructure standpoint, to be able to support that type of flexibility and really holding leaders accountable to making that investment and really supporting that flexibility is a behavioral change that has to happen across the organization at all levels of management. And change management, I can tell you, is not an easy task, and it's an even tougher task when you're in an industry that's a little more traditional, a little more conservative, and kind of historically, you know, maybe set in certain ways of working. So it's a constant conversation that needs to happen, but it's an important conversation because, to everyone's point here, there's talent that is actively being lost because of the lack of flexibility and the lack of diversity of thought in these areas. It's very important.
Let's talk a little bit about promises made, promises kept. When you are recruiting someone and you say we're going to give you A, B, C, and D. And one thing I want to talk about is investment in training. I'm a lifelong journalist, and I know at my last place, they promised training, they promised career development, but you still had to get the paper out the next day. You still had to feed the beast on the website. Not American City Business Journals, John. We do a great job of that, as far as you know. No, we do. How important is the follow-through on, once you have somebody in, to make darn sure that you're getting that career development? And kind of like I think you mentioned a little bit here and there, is otherwise you're going to lose them.
Well, I'll speak to that just a little bit here. First of all, I think talent development is not solely owned by the employer. It has to be equally owned by the employee themselves. They have to invest the time that it takes to put into that. And of course, keeping your promises about what you've said in regards to talent development, making the opportunities available to them. But the second fold is that they need to also take the time and engage in that as well and follow through on those opportunities as well. Making them available to employees today, it looks totally different because our schedules are so hard to build that in and have them devote the time that it takes for development and things of that nature. So it's a commitment on both ends. And for sure, if you're falling short of those promises, then there's some errors or there's some issues there.
It's essential you follow through. I mean, you need to, if you said you're going to do something, you need to do it. Because again, talent, they have options. We're in a short labor market pool, right? I mean, it has declined. We know here in this region from 2019 to present, we know that. So talent has options. So you need to follow through with what you say you're going to do. And I think part of it is a constant, how is it that you do it as a team, correct? I mean, bringing maybe people in. I know we've used AGH a lot to come in. Carrie Cox, who will be on the next panel. Carrie has come in and done a lot of different things with our team. We've also worked with some people that you all do at Fidelity, Maria Vellalatte. I mean, and then on the other side of it is that we really encourage our team leadership as they're doing annual reviews to say to each person, hey, if there's an opportunity where you see you can, you know, further develop maybe what you're doing here or maybe it's an interest, let us know that. I mean, if we can fiscally do it, I mean, can you afford to do it fiscally, right? And then secondly, how does it work with their time? I mean, you kind of work through those things, but I think you invite people into that because I do feel like in that regard, now we've got a team of 20. We don't have a team of thousands. You know, I mean, I think part of it is working through all of that too, the scalability of these things, but for us as a team of 20, it's we can be pretty, you know, forthright on that, and a lot of times that can happen as a result. And so, again, I do think that you need to execute what you say you're willing to at least explore and do.
I would say, to Jeff's point, yes, you definitely should live up to your words and walk the talk. But I would add that retention doesn't happen without investment and professional development. And if we are thinking about our pipelines, the first pipeline that we have to build is our internal pipeline. And if we are not investing in training and professional development, we are not getting the best innovative thoughts and ideas as we're building new products and serving new customers. So we want to make sure that we are constantly making that investment because it has a direct impact to our growth and sustainability.
Just one thing too, Kurt. I think we have a responsibility to create opportunities for our own talent internally. I mean, how do they advance within the organization? I mean, I think that's really important. For me personally, you know, I came in to run downtown development. The community gave me the opportunity in 2015 to broaden that into the Great Wichita Partnership. Now we are involved from downtown to 10 counties. That, to me, was an incredible growth opportunity, right? And so I think be mindful of, as a retention, is like, okay, I can be training people and helping them in that way, but then how is that maybe opening up a new opportunity for them in the organization? So I think that upper mobility, being deliberate with that as much as you can, is really important as well as a retention opportunity, but even recruitment, because if people see that you're wanting to hire, they see that there's mobility for them. A part of what we're doing as an economic strategy for this community is that we have 7 industry sectors, and I think a lot of times is we're looking for talent to stay, well, to attract probably more so than well, stay too, because we want to create depth within our industry sectors. For years, we had it like this all across the plans of transportation logistics, aviation, advanced manufacturing. But now what do you see happening that you've already heard about? We're creating depth. So now within aerospace, we are part of putting people back on the moon. You also have defense, in addition to general aviation and commercial aviation. Healthcare, you have the whole new biomedical campus that's coming in to our community. Again, creating depth. So I think for us as a community, talent has to be able to see there are growth opportunities for myself to stay, because that person may have a spouse or a significant other that also is here. So there's all these different things that we have to think about in the ecosystem, again, to create that for talent.
I should have mentioned at the very beginning, we'll take questions at the end, but need for about 10 minutes for questions. Jamie, how much time do we have? I've lost track of when we started. 5 more to questions. So think of your questions. Let me ask this question, and maybe keep Jeff out of this one. How do you all sell Wichita when you're talking to an out of town recruit?
Well, I am also a transplant. I don't think I mentioned that when I introduced myself. So it's not easy to be honest if you're recruiting candidates from larger markets. So I always kind of tell my, you know, personal story. So if I were to actually speak to, you know, that my days of recruiting, I would speak to my personal story. And the reason I came here is family. And I think this community really exudes family. It's a great place to raise a family. You know, my parents actually moved here after I moved here. And I followed my brother here, who retired from the Air Force here many years ago. So I think it's just really understanding the community, understanding the family-oriented nature, and really understanding, you know, a lot of the growth and development that's happening here. And honestly, when I moved here, I wasn't aware of a lot of the growth, and I wasn't aware of a lot of the industries that were here. And I think maybe that's the issue, right, is that, you know, I came from the North Dallas area, and so I wasn't aware of all the different industries, even though my own brother lived here. I was not aware of all of the opportunities and the growth that were available in this market. So I think as you're looking to recruit talent here, really speaking to the opportunities that are available here that, you know, may be harder to obtain in larger markets as far as developing one's career. So that's kind of how I would approach it. But it's definitely not an easy, you know, one answer, you know, fix by any means. I think it's very complex because recruiting talent is about people, and every person's story and motivations are different. Mm-hmm. So I think as a talent organization, you really have to understand the underlying motivations for each candidate that you're speaking to, because the story that you're selling about Wichita may be different and may be of different importance based mm-hmm. on who you're speaking with and the diversity of the individual that you're speaking with.
Anyone else?
I think I don't often recruit talent outside of Wichita, but I think the story from Wichita is a little bit different for me. It's really personal because I've been here my whole life, and so what Lacey speaks about when she talks about raising a family here is certainly one of the good points that they have. I think Wichita offers a lot more than what outsiders seem to think we offer. You may have to dig for it a little bit, but we offer a tremendous amount in areas that some people might not say we offer it in, the fine arts or athletics or something like that. And I think that those things go missed. Also, a lifestyle change. It's a lifestyle. The commutes are smaller. It's more laid back. I just think that people miss some of those factors. But
go ahead, Jeff. It's all right.
LaSonda was going to go.
Jeff, you got it.
Yes, I feel unbridled
right now. Tell how do you tell people to sell Wichita?
Well, part of it is I think equipping you to be able to sell, right? And so we actually have developed a portal that is strictly talent oriented. It's choosewichita.com. And it's a portal, if you will, that tells the stories of the why individuals selected to move to Wichita. So I think for talent, a lot of times you need that connection, right? Because they're going to connect with someone potentially on that site that looks like them, that's going in the same profession. There's a connection that's made there. It's personal. There's a relationship that can be actually developed there. So for us with Wichita, you know, I mean, I'm selling it right now. We're hiring a key position to run downtown. And we've got, I can't go into who it is, or certainly the cities, like I don't want to narrow the thing down for the journal yet. but we will. But the thing is, we have candidates from major cities looking at this community. They see opportunity. And I think part of it is if you're trying to recruit, your team is trying to recruit, let us help you be able to sell this community. I mean, Ricky and Tammy and Kara, we can give you the why. And honestly, I think part of it comes down to how we sell it personally with our enthusiasm about our community. I mean, you know, if we're excited about a place, right, that's contagious. People will grab a hold of that. The thing that I think is really important for us to sell for Wichita is that how, and we know talent wants, we know, you know, we've got a group called Progressive Urban Management Associates out of Denver, but also Deloitte. We understand that talent wants to be able to touch things. They want to make things their own. They want to see their fingerprints on this community's development, right? That they're contributing to a bigger picture. That opportunity is in Wichita. You can get that here. If you raise your hand, you will be called upon. I mean, we do it all the time. So part of it is how we sell it, how we equip you to sell it. I see this as a city of opportunity. I mean, our mayor, you know, she's 40 years of age. She speaks multiple languages. Now when you come into the airport, that hello to Wichita is done in multiple languages now. We are an international city. We're global in so many capacities. And so part of it is, you know, moving to the Midwest, you know, there's a humbleness. We talk about that sometimes, right? We need to beat the table about who we are because we have in aerospace, Ryan was talking about, we have prominence and dominance in that aerospace industry. I mean, think we're one of five aerospace clusters in the world. We're rising in healthcare. I mean, part of it is we're the best days. I mean, there's so many things coming in the next 2 to 5 years if we step into the opportunity, and that will sell Wichita. It's already, you're already seeing it in so many different ways, but we have to press into that opportunity every day deliberately and just be very, hey, this is why. Why not? Why would you not come here? It's all in how we communicate that.
LaShonda, were you going to say something?
Jeff said it all.
Okay. One more quick question. These can be short answer, and then we'll go to questions from the audience. The upcoming biomedical campus and the jobs it will bring. Hopefully the Integra Technologies project gets started. $1.8 billion semiconductors, 2,500 jobs plus associated jobs besides that. Are you at all, at companies, are you concerned at all about enough talent being out there to spread around?
Our positioning is that we're going after, well, first of all, anyone who's here in Wichita, the region, state, if they want to work in one of these industries, come at it. We want to put you in those places. We want to get you into the training. But we're also being very aggressive about recruiting talent. Honestly, the things that Kirk just said, those are calling cards for us, right? I mean, we're working with the state right now, Commerce Department. We actually hired a group out of New York, Development Councils International. That group actually positions countries. The state's working with them. We have been working with them to actually do a very aggressive recruitment campaign beyond the boundaries of our state. And part of it's being driven into where is it that we know that we have graduates across this country? And so how is it? They already kind of know us, right? We want to make sure they understand what the opportunities are. I will tell you with the biomed, huge. I mean, I still think we're getting our arms around what that's going to mean for this community. If you think about what happened in Phoenix in 20 years, Google it, the Phoenix Biomedical, it has grown astronomically in a matter of 20 years. Look at MD Anderson and what's happened around now Houston is probably the anchor, if you will, of biomed. But the thing is this, is that because of the engineering force that we have here, That's going to be part, bioengineering is going to be part of our specialty. And as you talk to Rick Mumma and you think about the potential, that it's starting what it is right now, but that has the opportunity, and the journal has put us as a quote on this, that could grow to 12,000 people in time within healthcare. That's another spirit in healthcare. So the thing is now, I think, Kurt, is that, yes, we need people. And is it a concern? Yeah, we need to, you know, make sure we can fill the positions. But how we market ourselves and position that, again, you're in an emerging area, you can be a part of that. People want to be a part of being that story. And so it's how is it we tell that compelling? And so, it's just, I mean, the global opportunities. I mean, again, Senator Moran in aerospace with defense and space. I mean, we had Gwen Shotwell here. Now, if you don't know that name, Gwen Shotwell runs SpaceX. So there's Elon Musk, and then there's Gwen, okay? I mean, they're here. They have been here. Not Elon, but I don't want to start any rumors. But Gwen has. But you also have had other global leadership here, and they see incredible opportunities in this workplace. So all that needs to be an attraction, and we have to be very deliberate with that.
All right. If you have a question, raise your hand. Jamie will run to you with a microphone.
Hey, thank you all for participating in a panel. That's awesome. There's a weird echo up here, by the way. My question is, for some of the companies, how do you start getting talent when Kay was mentioning the kids are doing all this research? How do you get them to look at a career field when they're maybe in high school and know, hey, I have to get that four-year degree, which is already investment, to get to that next point, and then know that there's a career and opportunities beyond that, and make that first initial investment?
Sure, I can answer that one. So for us at Spirit, we do hands-on high school internships, and actually we're doing even a program at the middle school level for what we call We Build It Better boxes, where there's essentially a big toolbox where they build a miniature plane, and then we actually will have them come to tour the site as well. So I think anytime you're looking at the younger populations, the more that you can have an interactive program, where you're actually bringing them into your facility, showing them, you know, big bright eyes as soon as they see, you know, how massive it is to actually build the fuselage of an airplane, they perk up, right? The interest grows the more hands-on the experience is. So that's something that our pipeline development team is really great at, creating those experiences for even younger and younger kids, but we have a very robust high school internship program where we do that.
I would agree. I think Kay said it earlier. We have to expose our young people to the opportunities that exist, right? So for us in the banking industry, a lot of times people think the only job is to be a teller, right? And banking is much, much more broader than that. And so we have to expose our young people in a very meaningful, intentional way. And so we do things. So currently we adopt schools. So we invest in the schools to ensure that they, one, get to know what a banking profession looks like. They understand financial literacy. They know that we're present for them and that we're showing up for them year after year so that we can start to build those relationships not only with the children, but also build those relationships with the family so that we are growing our pipelines in very intentional ways.
Kind of just piggybacking on both what the awareness campaign and the engagement at an early level, WSU Tech does that very well in multiple different areas. We're even starting to branch out into the middle school areas and just giving that the younger generation an awareness of what different positions are out there, because there's some of them that they're not aware of going into it. You know, if you live in Wichita, you're familiar with aviation. You probably know somebody who works in aviation or something like that. But having, like she said, having touched the airplane and seeing how big it is, they're just not, you know, understanding what that looks like. Or, you know, bringing something to the classroom like a welder or something like that so they they can see those careers in a different light as well, and just the awareness of it. And I think Wichita does a pretty good job of getting those out to the younger generations, but still more work there. So,
such a great question, and I have a call to action for you. Right now, Keith Long with Workforce Alliance, they're running the Youth Employment Program. And they have right now over 500 high school students that are looking for opportunities within business. And this is the time for, think about it, in high school, this is a time of exploration. I mean, going to work someplace for a summer doesn't mean it's a life career. My son, who's in college, did an, you know, he was working this a couple summers ago, and I said, your deal, Matthew, is to learn in this period of time all that you can learn, and it'll apply to the next thing. Now, he did tell me, Kay, he told me, he said, Dad, I'm not your project. And I said, well, I don't know about that. you need to accept it. But the deal is, right now, they only have 100 companies, or not 100 companies, they have 100 of those kids placed. We need companies to step up. So reach out to Keith Loyne or Amanda Duncan at Workforce Alliance if your company would be willing to work with high school students. Now, their engagement doesn't stop there. They help you understand, okay, here's the environment, or here's what you can really have them step into. The thing is, it needs to be as meaningful as it can be, right? I mean, however you can really enrich that experience is really important. But right now, that youth employment program is a direct pipeline of creating this highly technical term, stickiness, of the talent in this community. Because if they get to know you, WSU does this now in college, right, with the applied learning model. If you haven't been at the Innovation Campus, you need to go, because, again, it's applied learning, and it's an incredible model that's happening.
Any more questions? Go ahead.
Okay. I've heard each of you use the word investment numerous times through this session, and about investing in people, really truly listening to their thoughts, their ideas, investing in them. CEOs and upper management of any organization, their primary responsibility is the solvency of an organization, including their growth strategies. Can you speak to the word investment implies there's a return. Can you speak to the return that you're seeing with your efforts in investing in people, including DEI?
So I would say one of the returns is that you are retaining them. Another return is that the retention of that employee, one, they understand the business, so they understand how to create some of the solvency that you are trying to achieve as a CEO. So they are helping you to build new strategies. They are helping you connect and be proximate to the diversity of community that you're serving. So I think when we invest in the individual, that provides them with the energy to continue in investing in growing and sustaining the organization that you're building.
Any other questions? How about a round of applause for this panel? Thank you so much to Lacey and LaShonda, Amber and Jeff.